You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we are the best kind of oppression. If you enjoy your trip into the midside here today, or your oppression, please tell a friend. Referrals are our number one source of tourism. Also, you can support us per episode, per content we create on patreon.com/themidside or themidside.com/patreon. Also, you can leave us a review on iTunes. This week, user Anarchy Seeds left us a review on iTunes. 5 stars. Thank you, Anarchy Seeds. It says, title, Oppressed in the Best Way. And his text is, I'd get raped in Nanking if it was the only way to get more Midside episodes, but don't get any ideas, Justin and company. I appreciate the fact that you recognize that I am the leader here in the Midside. So thank you for that awesome review, Anarchy Seeds. I definitely will not get any rape ideas because you are a man.
So foreshadowing. You would get them if...
Oppression! Oppression here at the Midside. I do, before we get into introducing the co-host, I do want to talk a little bit about sort of an experience and an idea I had this weekend. So I saw Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, like a lot of people out there. And when I did, it made me realize something. And it made me realize just how much of a mind fuck our culture is. And I'm not saying that just because I had an insane woman sitting next to me in the theater. This woman was like 40 years old, over 40 at least, out of shape. And she had to have been like literally insane because she was just like talking to herself the whole movie. And I don't mean talking to herself the way like Fiza Daniel's wife talks in movies. Like when she talks, you're like, okay, I get it. Like that's an intelligent thing to say. I get why she's saying it. She would like, when the characters would walk into a room, this woman would be like, wow, it's so beautiful. As if she had never been like on the internet in the year 2017. There was even a point where like, I left to go to the bathroom because I have a tiny ass bladder and came back. And when I did, I was sitting in the front row. So I would like parkour underneath the railing there. And when I went under it the second time coming back, she's asking me, why didn't you go over the top? And I'm trying to ignore her because I didn't go over the top because I didn't want to disturb people. But she still kept insisting. And she kept being like, are you okay? Are you okay? Till I finally had to say yes, just to get her to stop talking to me. Like as if parkouring under the railing somehow made me like hurt or something. So I'm not talking about insane in that way. I'm talking about I realized from watching this movie, and when we do the review, you'll understand what I'm saying a little bit more, but we teach these contradictory psychological ideas that make it so people are basically holding this unreconcilable contradiction in their head. On one hand, we teach them the self and the individual is wrong and you need to be adherent to the group and, you know, other people, and the second-handedness of what other people say matters. And then on the other hand, we teach them this idea that feelings are what is most important and your feelings are what matter. Nobody can take away your feelings, and feelings are tools of thought. So what you feel is what is true, which leads to this narcissism. So everyone is walking around with this contradiction of, one, I have to be selfless and care about other people other than myself over myself, and that's what makes me a good person. And two, my feelings are what's most important. Holding those two ideas in our head, is it any wonder everyone is so fucked up? Is it any wonder we're going through all of this nonsense right now? We're living in a world that's telling us two things are true that are just completely, first of all, they're both completely wrong, and they're both completely opposite of each other. Joining me this week, from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards. Daniel, I know I just said this real quick, but this is the first time you've heard it. Do you have any thoughts on this contradiction, or is it too much psychologizing for you?
You know me, I hate psychology. No, I would say that my first reaction was initially like, only holding two contradictions in your head, amateur. I live in Washington, D.C., where we work. Our currency is contradictions. So it's an interesting observation. I don't necessarily think they're 100% at odds with each other. They're mostly at odds with each other. It's mostly just they're not true. That's difficult. Not that they're contradictory per se, in all cases at least. But I don't know. I mean, I've been thinking a lot about history lately and trying to decipher, like, are we any more fucked up now than we have been historically speaking? And the only answer I can come to is yes. Yes, we are. Mm. Yeah.
We're probably going to end up disagreeing on that point in one of these stories we have on the line.
Save it.
Fight. I'm saving it. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. As you've noticed already, also joining us from the Hills of White Privilege, James Elias. James, do you have any thoughts on this contradiction I've identified?
Have
I not identified anything, and I'm just an idiot?
I don't have additional thoughts because I find myself very much agreeing with you. But the question I would ask is how did you come to this? Because it sounds like the crazy woman had something to do with this, but I'm not clear exactly how. So I'm wondering how
that was
you...
just a stand-up. The crazy one was just a stand-up bit. Okay. When we get into the review of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, it would be very clear where I got this from.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. Of course. Yeah.
My favorite thing about the introductions, Justin, is that every week you try to uphold this charade that you're the only host at the beginning. And then there are surprises that there are other people joining you. And it's a mystery as to who these faceted mystery hosts are.
Hey, look, if you want to talk about production, we can do that off air, okay? If you wanted to change the way the show is produced, we could do that off air. Because right now, Dr. Drew, this is not good pod.
I give great pod, Justin.
All right, do you want to actually go into you giving great pod?
Woo!
Let's do it in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
This week, the Republicans tried to own the biggest mistake of Obama's 8-year legacy by quote-unquote repealing the Affordable Care Act and replacing it with the much different American Health Care Act. Yes, and it is so different that there's an H in the middle of the acronym.
That sums up what the Republicans do in a nutshell, doesn't it?
Yes.
Oh my God, that's so true.
We're going to take what the Democrats do, but we'll just, like, change a letter. What's that meme that goes around? That meme that's going around? Like, here's my homework, just change it up a little bit so it doesn't seem like you're copying it. That's what the Republicans do with the Democrats.
That's right. Oh, the cartoon that I remember is a donkey driving a car at 100 miles per hour toward the edge of a cliff, and the elephant in the backseat going, "Are you crazy? The speed limit here is 90. Which I think sums it up nicely as well. Anyway, the House passed this health care reform bill on Thursday. And as you might expect, the entire internet from both sides is going insane over whether or not this is the best thing ever, the worst thing ever. There is so much farce to go around. We thought here at the Midside we'd cut through it by starting off with a story that I think encapsulated the farce around this story, which is that not just one, but several blogs, sort of left-of-center blogs, and even some fairly notable moderate left-of-center blogs, started this meme that this new healthcare plan would make rape a pre-existing condition that you can now be denied health insurance for. Problem is, there's no factual basis for that analysis.
Oh,
so much so that places like the Washington Post, the New York Times, PolitiFact even, which is the most anti-factual website on the internet, ironically, had to all announce that this was a giant lie. In fact, the Washington Post gave it the coveted, or perhaps uncoveted, 4 Pinocchios. 4. Huge lie. So the bill, the AHCA, American Healthcare Act, says nothing about rape. Or sexual assault. It's not in there at all. The only thing it says about pre-existing conditions is that under the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, you could not be denied coverage at all for any pre-existing condition. And in the new bill, you can't be denied at all health insurance for a pre-existing condition unless a state legislature submits an application to allow health insurance in their state to exclude hyper-specific, very limited pre-existing conditions. And even in those cases, you cannot be denied coverage. You can just be charged slightly more for your coverage. So there it is, Justin. We begin the conversation with the American Healthcare Act with a lie and end it with a complete absurd change to a stupid rule. What say you?
This is how bad it is. I feel like a battered wife. I feel like a battered spouse because it's like...
Which is a pre-existing condition now, but yes.
No, because like they're basically saying like, you know, we've been punching you in the face very, very hard for a long time, but we're going to stop punching you in the face or punch you just a little bit less in the face. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Like, oh, yeah, you're gonna charge the people with pre-existing conditions a little bit more. I'm like, yeah, that's some relief. That'll save us some money. Where the whole thing is just, like, completely fucked up, but that's the point I'm at now.
It does feel a little bit like battered spouse syndrome. Absolutely. It's like, oh, he's only going to punch me in the stomach now. Fantastic.
Now, I don't know if I've talked about this on the show before, but I've certainly talked about it with you, Daniel. Just the idea of like, we're not even using the word insurance properly anymore.
Yes.
We're forcing people to have insurance for pre-existing conditions.
Yes.
Can you imagine that? That's like, my car is already wrecked. Can I please buy car insurance? I just totaled my car. I was just in an accident. Can I please buy car insurance? And then they have to buy you a new car. That's what that's like. The word insurance means in case something goes wrong. So definitionally, you shouldn't be allowed to buy insurance of any kind if it's already wrong, if it's already broken.
Or, you know, a market would have multiple solutions to this problem, right? So maybe you can buy insurance for certain pre-existing conditions, or it's just at a different rate, and maybe some exclude you from buying insurance. But none of them exclude you from getting health care. And I think that's an incredibly important distinction here. You can still get health care. And in fact, no matter what you think of this law, it is still a law in this country that if you show up at an emergency room and ask for treatment, they cannot deny you treatment.
Well, that's been true for like 30 years, hasn't it?
It's been
true
for quite a while. And no matter what you think of it, the point is that it's an established existing thing that I think that even if you took away the law at this point, most hospitals would still not turn people away because they would be ostracized and whatnot. But
well, I mean, come on, dude. Like, you know, we're paragons of selfishness here. But even if I was a doctor working in the ER and somebody stumbled in and they were like, I don't have health insurance, I would still treat them and be like, fucking figure it out in the long run. Because let me ask you this. You know, the whole thing is like, well, we don't want people to be in debt because they don't have health insurance. And if they wander into an ER because they're hurt and then they're in debt for the rest of their life. I have a question for you people out here who are saying this. Would you rather be in debt or dead?
In debt.
Touche. Not a choice, James. This is a dichotomy.
I'm making a dichotomy to make a point, obviously. I mean, it's exactly what you say. There's so much equivocation in this issue and everything. We call it the AHCA or the ACA, which, by the way, the ACA makes me think of the Adam Carolla administration, which would be pretty good. No, we call them all these things, but it's really the Force Everyone to Have Insurance Act.
Yeah, it's honestly just, I mean, I don't know if the Democrats purposely did this or if they didn't notice or whatever it is, but it's generally basically just a giant subsidy for the insurance industry. I mean, the most cynical among us would probably say they did it on purpose because the government is bought and paid for by corporate interests. I don't know. I suppose less cynical motives, but honestly, that's what it ends up being, which is we're going to take the biggest insurance companies and we're going to guarantee them money forever.
Right. And what the greater point for all of us is, it actually gives us a worse product. We get worse insurance because of all of this.
Yeah. And not to mention, and this will be a good segment for James, it's immoral to force other people to buy your health insurance.
Yeah.
James?
Well, I mean, I think our audience will be pretty familiar with the fact that it's immoral to force someone to pay for your health insurance.
No, but, elucidate that a little bit, because we don't want to assume all of our audience is on the same page. So don't go into like
as well.
Right. Well, I mean, basically, here's what it comes down to is you can't have a right to any kind of product, because a product comes from someone else's labor. If you have a right to the product of someone else's labor, that basically means you have the right to enslave someone to any degree it is. You're taking their free labor. So that's the moral aspect. The new aspect for me that I'm seeing here is that just being very encouraged at some voices that are on the right. I've been listening to the Ben Shapiro podcast a lot, and I was really glad he was saying the same thing. He was just basically saying, I'm through with these Republicans. Well, he didn't quite come around that much, but he's just realizing, like, wow, the Republicans are not doing anything to actually roll back Obamacare. They're not doing anything to actually, you know, follow through on fiscally conservative principles. Ben Shapiro, if you're a midsider and anyone like Ben Shapiro, you need to come over to the classical liberal side of things. You need to just abandon the Republican Party. They are not doing what you want anymore. You need to just simply abandon them. Stop giving them your votes. And I know Ben Shapiro and other podcasters like him, they're already halfway over to this point, but just stop it. Stop calling yourself a Republican. Like, Republicans have left you behind. You need to investigate the classical liberal tradition / libertarian tradition / objectivist philosophy. That's where it's at.
Absolutely.
This seems to be the theme of the episode so far, is just bashing on Republicans.
Finally.
Yeah, I always remember that from the first season of Bullshit, where Penn and Teller are like, this seems like Republican bullshit right now, so let's go after the war on drugs. I was like, all right. No, but I want to talk about a little bit here the actual headline that we brought up here, that rape is a pre-existing condition. How are they possibly arguing that rape or being a victim of rape is a pre-existing condition? What is their argument, Daniel?
Their argument is that this bill allows states to issue basically to ask for exemptions from the no pre-existing condition clauses, but it doesn't put any limits on what they can ask, what exemptions they can ask for in the pre-existing conditions. So basically the left said, well, let's find the most absurd possible thing and write an article saying that this could now be a pre-existing condition, except that they framed it as it is now this thing. Not in some dystopian scenario, it could be a pre-existing condition. So it's not only a straw man, but it's a horribly manipulative rhetorical tactic on top of a straw man.
I agree 100%. And what you just did in that brief 30 seconds is you just explained the process of how fake news is created.
Yeah.
Where they find the most extreme thing possible and they make you think that that is exactly what is going on.
Yeah. And it happens on both sides.
I mean, they've been doing this for a while, right? I mean, didn't they do it with, like, you know, they want to take away birth control from women and stuff in regards to this issue too? Like, as if somehow, like, birth control should be paid for by the government? I mean, James, isn't that immoral, forcing us to pay for everyone's birth control?
Yeah, that's just an example of what I was talking about. Yeah, it's not that I'm anti-birth control. It's anti-me paying for your frickin' birth control.
It's always...
I will pay for your birth control if I'm fucking you so you don't get pregnant so I don't have to pay for the kid. It's a hell of a lot cheaper to pay for the birth control than the kid. I'm just saying.
It's true. You know, Yaron Brook, God rest his soul. Just kidding.
What?
Always, I don't know why I felt like I needed to say it. Like, that was literally the first thing came to my mind when I said his name. Anyway, I guess it's the way I said it. Really concretized it in a talk he gave, where he basically said, "Look, if your wife gets cancer and you don't have the money to pay for it, and you go to your neighbor, you have two options with your neighbor. One is you can ask your neighbor, 'Can you please help me pay for this? I don't have the money. I will pay you back,' or whatever the arrangement is. 'Can you please help me?' And if the neighbor says yes, fine. If the neighbor says no, you only have one other option, which is you rob your neighbor in some form. You take his money by force, and we all recognize that that is immoral and that is wrong. But now it's like, well, I don't have the money, so what if I got the entire block together to go, and we all go take my neighbor's money and pay for my wife's health care? We still recognize that that's wrong. But at what point of growth do we switch from understanding that taking that guy's money is wrong or taking everyone on the block's money is wrong to saying now we have enough people so that that taking of someone else's money to pay for her health insurance has become morally acceptable?
It's because taxes are a floating abstraction. People don't realize what it's connected to. And that's why it is. They don't sit there and go concretely what you just said. They don't see the connection between those two things at all.
Yeah, absolutely. So the moral issue here is pretty clear. But do you guys mind if we talk for just a moment about the policy issue here? And it's certainly the much less important element of this debate. But I want to get
it sounds fucking boring, but go ahead.
I'm going to go through it real quickly. I want to know, one, if you think that this act is actually any better than the Affordable Care Act. And two, even if it is, quote unquote, policy better, is it worse in the long run because of some underlying premises? And I'm already leading you down a certain path. Anyway, so like, here's some particular changes. You can go to the Wikipedia page for the American Healthcare Act of 2017. They have a beautiful side-by-side list of all the differences between the two. Here are the major ones. Obamacare has an individual mandate. This insurance has no individual mandate. You will not be required to buy insurance. Health savings accounts. Under Obamacare, individuals can put $3,400 or families can put about $7,000 in a tax-free health savings account. This new one doubles that. The Cadillac tax. Obamacare is going to put a huge tax on really great healthcare plans that your employers provide by 2020. This one pushes it off to 2025. Obamacare has four different taxes that you may not have known about. A 3.8 tax on investment income, a 1% tax on individuals with a high income, a fee on health insurance providers based on certain plans, and a 2.3% tax on medical devices. New plan repeals all four of those taxes. And then, of course, the pre-existing conditions. Obamacare can't be denied. New one, states can opt out of certain things, but you still can't be denied insurance. It could just cost a little more. And then finally, Obamacare, income-based subsidies, i.e. you can't afford insurance. The state will give you money to afford insurance. The new one, the AHCA, still has subsidies, but it's not income-based. It's age-based. It's how old you are is the more credits you get. So those are the basic – there's a bunch of other differences, but those are the basic things. So, gentlemen, does it matter that this sounds like incrementally better in terms of healthcare policy or not at all?
I mean, on a personal level, the fact that there's not a fucking fine anymore means I can not be employed, which is great. I don't have to fucking sit at a desk if I don't want to. Whereas, before I was just tutoring and I was making money and I didn't have health insurance because I'm healthy. So now I don't have to pay for that and I don't have to be employed traditionally if I don't want to. So on a personal level, that's good. But no, I'm just going to go back to my same metaphor that I was using before about the domestic violence thing. Basically, you've just asked me, is it better now that you're no longer in an abusive relationship with WWE Universal Champion Brock Lesnar and you're now in an abusive relationship with WWE Cruiserweight Champion Neville? No, there's no difference besides the guy's weight. They're still fucking monsters who are beating the shit out of me.
I thought you were going to do a more illustrative, different analogy, like, you know, first the WWE guy and then now you're in an abusive relationship with Woody Allen or something.
That's underplaying how bad the AHCA is.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a valid analogy. And what makes it worse is that now the lighter weight class of meathead beating down on us is supposed to be the representative of capitalism and free markets. And what makes things worse is I don't know how to carry on the wrestler analogy, but
leave that to me, James. You're not on the show.
Okay,
for that.
So once I spit this out, you know, you can carry on the analogy. But didn't they just get rid of the only thing that really held Obamacare together financially, which was the mandate? Now, I was completely against the mandate, of course, but why the fuck would you buy insurance before you're sick now? As soon as this happens, I'm not buying insurance anymore. I'm going to wait until something happens. I'm going to buy the best insurance I possibly can, and then I'm going to take advantage of it. Why are we not supposed to do that now?
Because we're good Americans.
Because you're stupid. That's why. The premise you just ignore, James, is the fact. Yeah, I always screw those two up. I'm sorry. Elucidated and what did I say?
You said something like
No, I said elucidated. I always transpose the C and the D. This is great pod. Moving on. No, James, the premise that you are ignoring here is that you're smart, that you're like, wait, I don't have to be in a relationship? Whereas everyone's like, wait, I need to be in a relationship, and my only two choices are to be abused by Lesnar or Neville. Well, I'll pick Neville, because if I'm going to get beat up, I want to get beat up by the smaller guy. That's the mentality they have. But you're like, wait, I don't have to wrestle? Wait, that's wow. I don't have to compete. I can just quit? Okay.
Well, I can get the trophy without competing is what it comes out to. I can still take home the belt at the end of the day by just showing up at the end once you know, the other half of my tag team has won. You
come
know?
In with a chair at the end. And just
I'm
going to
do a really esoteric wrestling metaphor. What you're talking about is you have the Money in the Bank briefcase. So the Money in the Bank briefcase is when you win a match that says Money in the Bank, the briefcase you can cash in for a title shot at any time. Well, what these guys do is they win that match, and then they wait until there's a brutal match for the championship, cash in the contract, and immediately pin the guy who just won. So they become the champion on a technicality. That's what you're saying healthcare is now. It's money in the bank.
Yeah, yeah, right. So I mean, I could be getting this wrong because I got to admit, I haven't looked into this too hard, but what stops me?
Wrestling or the AHCA?
Either. And both are, of course, very related to one another. You need to understand one in order to understand the other. And I don't understand either very well at this point. You know, I it sounds like it's simple logic. Just why the fuck would I buy insurance now? And so what's going to happen is it's going to bankrupt the
more expensive. Yes.
Sure, but fuck it. I did, you know, what are the odds of me getting, you know, sick over the course of the next few years? And, you know, not too high. Once I do get sick, I've saved all that money in the interim. Who the fuck cares?
Right, the money you save not getting insurance is not equal to the money you have to pay if you do get sick.
So I looked up the answer to that question, James, and the answer is still a stupid answer, which is that you would still be incentivized not to buy insurance, which is that there's a provision that insurers can impose a 1 year 30% surcharge on consumers with a lapse in coverage. But
and I'm sure there's a limit on the surcharge. It's not like the surcharge is, you know, 10 grand or something, right?
No, because
and
you can't be
can,
denied.
Not will, correct?
Yeah. And it's can, yes. So
well, I'm sure they will, because they gotta get their money back somehow, but aren't the insurance companies gonna go fucking bankrupt like even faster, which was one of the original hidden motives of Obamacare? Like this just makes Obama the whole purpose of Obamacare even more juicy, right?
Right. Indeed. That's why the Democrats are laughing
Fuck!
All the way
back. Sorry.
Nancy Pelosi I'm sure she just could not hold in her laughter when this was passed. Have you seen the Democrats flipping out about this? No, because it accomplishes the same thing they've been trying to fucking accomplish, which is bankrupt the insurance companies in the long run and go to some sort of socialized or single-payer system. So, thank you, Republicans.
Dog.
Fantastic. Well done there. What the Republicans are doing is leading us down the road to an evil empire, much like in Star Wars, which apparently this empire was caused by unchecked fake news. At least according to Ben Garino, writing at the Washington Post. Indeed, this past week was Star Wars Day, May the 4th. Wore a little pin to work. It was fantastic. But he argues, quote, we never see a journalist in Star Wars, not in 8 movies and counting. The galaxy is otherwise rich in professions, which he lists. He says, but if there ever was a galaxy far, far away in need of a smart and independent press, you're looking at it. Ryan Britt, an editor who specializes in science fiction at the website Inverse, who wrote a 2015 book called Luke Skywalker Can't Read, says, quote, fake news in Star Wars is probably their number one problem. Star Wars denizens, if they're not illiterate, seem fundamentally disinterested in reading. There's a lack of deep reading and understanding and comprehension. The transference of cultural memory is really, really short. The article goes on to point out the fact that basically the Empire controls all media and they allow it to be propaganda, and we never see someone questioning them. We never see, and then he goes on to complain about such things like, in the downtime, we don't see people reading. It's one of his critiques of the movie. Like, we don't see people sitting around reading. And that's a bad thing. So, Justin, did fake news bring down the Republic? Or is this some other sort of attack on movie making and filmmaking that is lurking under the surface here?
Well, I do think he has somewhat of a valid point. And if he actually cares this much, he should just watch Serenity, because that's one of the main plots of Serenity, with Mr. Universe and the non-distribution of free information, and the whole climax of the movie is about them getting that message out and distributing it. So I get where he's coming from, but he's also missing something that we've seen before and we've come up with before, and we saw this with The Force Awakens, or what, maybe it was Rogue One. Was it Rogue One where people said it's the first Star Wars movie that addresses war? Was that Rogue One?
Yes.
I'm sorry, you don't have time to read in your downtime when you're in an intergalactic war against the dark side. What are you doing in your downtime? You're training so that when they show up, you can fight them. Otherwise, you're going to get cut in half and kicked down a pit.
That's what I thought when he was like, the biggest, their biggest, what did he say? How did he put it? The biggest problem in Star Wars is that people aren't reading. I was like, I think it's the big gun that blows up planets.
Right. And I mean, that's the way this is relevant to today is we're sitting here. I mean, this is what you were talking about with Iran, and we're talking about with the floating abstraction of taxes. The biggest problem today is not fake news. The biggest problem today is force. And if we're allowing, and that's the discussion we have, are we allowing too much force to be used against us and too much force to be used to take away our personal freedoms and our individual liberties, which are probably the same thing, but it sounds smart to repeat phrases differently.
To be clear, not the force, which is a net good, but right. Force in reality. Yeah.
Well, right. There's a balance to the force.
Hmm.
There should soon be gray Jedi. I hope so.
Mm-hmm. That's right. It's this kind of critique baffles me in many ways. One is purely a filmmaking critique here, which is like, I don't want to watch scenes where people are reading. Like, how fucking stupid is that? Like, I can assume that people are doing things in their day-to-day lives that are mundane in these universes that I don't need to see. We also don't see extended scenes of Luke Skywalker pissing. Does that mean there's a urinary tract problem in the Star Wars universe? We don't see extended fucking scenes. Does that mean children aren't being had in the Star Wars universe? Because seem like a bigger problem than reading, by the way.
That would improve Star Wars. If there were some fucking scenes, like, I could get behind that.
This is not Game of Thrones. So there are all sorts of things where I assume it's going on that we don't need to illustrate in art. Additionally, that one of the major plots in A New Hope, of course, is the transference of illegal information in the Rebels, i.e. the Death Star plans, like how you get these around, which basically shows there's a really tight control over communications. And it's not like having a journalist in the Empire is going to help you, because they're like the Nazi regime, right? They'll just kill you if you question them. So what is the point here? And the third thing is that I think, like, one of the main critiques he has here is, like, Rey in the new movie saying, like, she thought Luke Skywalker was a myth, right? And it's like, well, how could one of the most important people in their entire history be considered a myth? Because you're dealing with an enormous, enormous scale of planets here. And that's kind of what people forget when they're talking about this, is like the planets on the outer rims of Star Wars are forever fucking away from everything else. And they don't have the same culture. They don't have the same integrated history and the same integrated communication systems because they're so remote. It'd be like going to a remote tribe in our world in, let's say, in South America and ask them who Mark Zuckerberg is. And be like, well, I don't know who that is. Like, you don't know who Mark Zuckerberg is? He's one of the most important people on the planet. And then they would kill you with a stick.
What you've just convinced me of, Daniel, is that Jyn Erso is a journalist.
Interesting.
She doesn't really do much and everybody else does everything, but she gets the credit, but she still gets the information out there that nobody else had.
Yeah. By the way,
You go, fucking guy who wrote this article. Go watch Rogue One and go fuck yourself.
I had a sort of revelation about Rogue One that why it's everyone's favorite Star Wars movie is because it's the most naturalistic Star Wars movie. But
my critique of the first 2/3 of it makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's still an enjoyable film, but in retrospect and in watching it again, the characters have no efficacy, basically. Like, everything happens to them. Everything happens around them. They're engulfed in a larger plot. To the extent that they do have efficacy, it's only in the final third of the movie, and it's only very briefly, and it results in their death.
Wasn't my entire argument the first 2/3 sucks and the last 1/3 is good?
I still like it. It's still enjoyable, but I think it fails as romanticism, which is fine. It doesn't have to be romantic, but the point is I think that's why most people enjoy it, because it feels much more familiar to them, like other things, because naturalism
is so prevalent.
The point is,
I'm really smart and was right.
That is never the point. Ever.
I liked it because it was its own story and they didn't try to just repeat stuff they've done in the past. That was my main reason for for really liking this, especially liking it more than 7.
Yeah, which is fine. I mean, I have my own argument for why I don't mind the repetition. And I think William and I got into that. Maybe you did too, Justin, on the episode where we reviewed The Force Awakens, like why epic storytelling requires repetition.
Yes, we did.
But I understand that critique if you're looking at it more on an individual basis. It makes total sense to me why you would enjoy that more. But anyway, there's also the HoloNet, which I don't want to get into, which is like the internet in Star Wars, and it exists, and it's in the Rebels cartoon, and it's in the Clone Wars cartoon, and there's just so much about this article that's just fucking stupid. So,
and move on the greater point is, yeah, it's not fake news that is the greatest danger to our society. It's force, and us allowing force to be legitimately used against us.
Yeah, I like that as a message. And also, stop using the term fake news.
Fake
journalism. Juice? That's
fake
right.
Fake pews?
Speaking of fake, Cosmopolitan, this article, is the situationship ruining modern romance? And all I could think of was, what does a guy from New Jersey have to do with dating?
You're taking my joke! When I read this, I was like, are we talking about like a cruise that Mike from Jersey Shore is running?
Your jokes are too literal. The situation ship. Wow.
That's funny.
Okay.
Did you see my one today about the one I posted on Facebook about the French election?
Yes. Did a macaroon win the French election?
That's good.
Hilarious.
It's funny. Hilarious.
Pistachio, in fact.
It was that or a croissant beat out the Madeleine in the runoff.
I think they misunderstood Brexit and they thought it was breakfast, literally.
Right.
Oh my god. Moving on, Karina Shea writes an article I'm going to be really upfront with you here. I still don't know what the fuck she's referring to in reality.
Oh,
like, I don't
really
know what this is. So I'm trying to understand it entirely abstractly. But basically, she tells a story about meeting a guy in college at a bar. They started hooking up. They would go out to dinner and stuff, and she would sleep over and whatever. But, like, they never defined anything. They never called themselves a couple. They never said they were in a relationship or whatever. And then she found out it was causing him anxiety. And he said at a party, apparently, Basically, we're in this situationship where it's like things either progress or they don't. A situationship, he explained, was the catch-all term for those relationships sitting at the intersection of hooking up and in a relationship. It's a scary precipice, teeter-tottering between more than hooking up and very much dating, where a simple, what are we, can throw the entire system out of balance. All I could think was, how many concepts do we need to deal with whether or not we are dating? Justin?
Infinitely, if it appeases people's feelings, Daniel, because this is all about feelings, and it's not about the reality of the situation you're in. No, I mean, first of all, this is just like somebody said something stupidly and drunkenly, and she's trying to turn this concept into a thing. Just like cuffing. Like, there's fucking cuffing season now, and then there's like hooking up season. It's like, just shut the fuck up and just do what you want to do. And then there's two other things about this. One, this is very externally focused. Oh, what are we? So what can we tell other people that we are? I'm sorry. If you are routinely going over to that person's house and you are routinely spending the night and fucking, you are dating. You may have lame dates where all your dates are just in bed, but that is still dating. You are still in a relationship. You are relating in a way that is non-platonic and is sexual and probably romantic because you don't have sex for that long without getting emotionally attached somehow. And then the final thing is, This is just people who are fucking pussies. This literally. Is because they both wanted a relationship. Yes, literally. It's because they both wanted a relationship, but they were too afraid and had too much anxiety to bring it up because they were afraid of the other person saying no. Well, you know what happens when the other person says no? You get to reassess that and decide what you actually want with your life. More information is better because it helps you. But they are afraid, and so they create a term to make themselves feel better, which returns to the beginning of this rant.
I just... all the terms now. Like, I luckily got in a long-term relationship before the sort of floodgates opened on can define, can't define, platonic friendship, cuffing, hooking up, hanging out, dating, in a relationship, in a serious relationship, and the myriad other nonsense terms. But she tries to parse out in here, even like what you're talking about, she has this paragraph that just blows my mind, where it's like, if friends with benefits is platonic friends with sexual benefits, a situationship is a hookup with emotional benefits.
That's definitionally dating.
Isn't... Yeah. Hooking up with emotional benefit, isn't that already a thing?
But you see, Daniel, relationships are on a spectrum and they're fluid. And these people are just trans dating.
Yeah.
So, well, something about fluids. James?
This brings me back to this article reminds me of your sort of question or statement about have people always been this fucked up, or is it just now? And there's something that's more fucked up about us now that we are actually dignifying these sorts of situations with words. But if you
well,
look
he got
back,
good ratings. What do you want?
He got what?
Dignifying these situations. It's another Jersey Shore joke.
Got it. Okay. Moving past that, though, like, we're dignifying these situations with words nowadays. But when I think back, I think, have we always been this fucked up? I think so. Yeah. I mean, these sorts of problems have happened. Think about the fountain in the Fountainhead. Peter is dating / not dating in a relationship / not in a relationship with Katie. That is, they just didn't have a word for it.
Yeah, but Peter's a little bitch. That's my entire point. Well,
of course, but now we're just dignifying, we're saying it's okay to do what he did. Like, you know, in that book, I feel like anyone reading that book in, 1950, they would say, oh, well, he's kind of a pussy. Like, he's kind of in a relationship. / not, and they'd recognize that as pathological. But now we still have these problems, but our moral relativism is trying to normalize those pathological relationships by making them their own concept. Like, oh, you're not confused about your gender, you're just transgender. You're not confused about your relationship, you're just in a situationship. It's a spectrum of different things.
I love it. You just link transgender and situationship. Love it.
Yeah, it's a thing, James, where I think that you can look back historically and say that we've dealt with these issues, but I think the history of dealing with these issues until now is us trying to be more clear about the definitions of these given things. Yeah. And while we still be maybe confused about them, you know, and they may not be 100% clear lines, we try to put things in more defined and clear buckets until now, where we're spreading out the number of concepts we have and basically trying to say, who are you to judge? Who are we to judge? There are an infinite number of infinite possibilities that could be in a relationship. And I'm not in a relationship. I'm in a situation hanging out hookup ship.
Right. Where and a lot of this has to do with the internet, right? And the idea that for the first time, everyone is communicating at the same time and everything's more global. So we try to not have one term for everyone.
And it's not that we need one term. I mean, you can have, there's, you know, whatever, like the stupid saying, like Eskimos have a billion words for snow or whatever it is. It's like, fine. But all those things have things they refer to in reality, whereas these things have things that refer to what we feel about reality, basically. Like what we feel is going on as opposed to what may be actually going on or what even what we want to be going on. And I think that is the detrimental part of this. It's putting the feelings on top of reality and saying, well, I don't need to look at what's actually happening. I only need to observe what I'm feeling about it. And that is the only conceptual element that I need in this entire situation ship.
Which goes back to my monologue. And to drive home your historical analysis and to put a little point on this, it's even more dangerous because this is something that we're really discovering for the first time in human history. America in modern society is really the first time where you just get to choose your partner for whatever fucking reason you want. And so we're just learning about how to do this and we're fucking it up in this way? That's terrifying.
Didn't take
long. I don't know. That's been a thing though, Justin. Like think about back at, you know, maybe if you were gay, you wouldn't have freedom. But, you know, think about basically 1920s onward, you know, there was dating. You know,
like right, but if you look at that in the history of humanity, that's still relatively new.
Right. Yeah, it is relatively new, but it's not, you know, it's still 100 years old. What isn't 100 years old is this moral subjectivism leaking into the general culture where it's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, whereas, you know, again, like in 1950s, you read The Fountainhead and you see the sort of situation Peter and Katie are in. You say, huh, they're dating, but it's not healthy. Whereas now it's like, oh, we're in a situationship. It's not that it's unhealthy and it isn't normal. It's that it's like, oh, that's just its own thing and we have to respect that.
I agree with you. We're in complete agreement. We just disagree on the time frame. I just think that dating is still very new and choosing your partner is very new because only 100 years.
False dichotomy, you're both right, which is that while it is a new thing, when you have this other new thing, this other moral relativist thing being like, I liked the sort of metaphor that James put, like pouring on top, like seeping in, like it's being, we're being covered in relativistic goo. When you have that covering, this other new thing that
was
just
a relativism money shot.
That's right. Relativism bukkake. When you're having it cover that relatively new thing that's just emerging, you're going to have, you know, fucked up nonsense come out of it. Because you haven't even had time to solidify the one new thing, and on top we have this horrible layer of terrible that messes everything up.
I don't know if I agree with that, because it didn't take the culture, as far as I can tell anyway, it didn't take the culture that long to come up with defined terms for relationship, not relationship, dating, those sorts. It didn't take that long. And it's only recently that those sorts of solid lines are starting to break down.
That's true, but my argument is the picking of the partner still hasn't been perfected. So that's where the confusion comes in.
Well, speaking of picking of partners, it gets harder when you're drunk, apparently. As a new study from the Journal of Social Psychology found that straight men are more interested in gay sex after they've been drinking. So basically, the brunt of this study, which this is on the New Now Next website, which I think is part of the Logo Network, by the way, which is the gay TV channel.
This article came from Midsider Elliot.
Gotcha. Elliot. There are lots of photos in this of gay men almost making out. So if anyone's curious.
Or bi anyway, curious.
To support this claim, researchers conducted a field study of sorts outside of bars in the Midwestern United States, you know, where none of the homos hang out. So they approached 83 adults, determined how much alcohol they'd had via a breathalyzer test, and then showed these adults video clips of people of different genders drinking at a bar. After they were shown the clips, each person was asked a series of questions about the people in the video, ranging from whether they would buy them a drink to whether they'd have sex with them. Results show that alcohol intake made both men and women more open about their desire to sleep with an opposite-sex partner, but that men in particular also expressed an increased interest in sleeping with members of the same sex. So, Justin, is this something, a real phenomenon we discover that all straight men are secretly homos, just got to put enough Jack Daniels inside them, and then they'll let Jack and Daniel inside them?
Oh, good. I was wondering if you were going to go there with that joke. Although the fact that you're using the word Daniel, I don't know if you're trying to tell us something.
I picked an alcohol off the top of my head, and a bullet bourbon didn't quite work.
Off the top of your head. Off the top of your head. I get it.
Will
I get
you
it.
Let
it's okay.
Jim's Beam inside you?
That's right. Your dreams, Justin.
I don't know if I'm the right person to answer this as having never had alcohol before.
Oh,
none
forgot.
Of this makes any sense to me. None of this makes any sense to me. But I do think that this is a little bit of wishing from a certain segment of the homosexual population where they want, you know, there are people who want to, you know, it's the same idea that there are guys who want to make a girl who doesn't like them because it's like a conquest thing. That's certainly true in the gay community as well, where there are certain gay men who want to turn straight men gay because it's like a conquest. Look at how attractive I am. And I think that's a little of what this is.
There's things about the science of this that I could not find out. I tried to find like, so it's, you know, straight men more interested in gay sex after drinking. Well, how much more, how many of the straight men, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I couldn't find any of the concrete numbers.
So it's like global warming? Where it like increased like 2% of or 0.2%.
Right. And then of course you have to ask questions where it's like, okay, maybe these people identify as straight, but you know, are secretly not, or for whatever reason they haven't come out or whatever it is. Like there's not enough control here to say that there's some hard and fast evidence to suggest that this is a real phenomenon. I think this is nonsense science. And it's from the Journal of Social Psychology. So do we have to listen to anything they fucking say? Social psychology.
I mean, is it possible, though? Is sexuality that fluid? That's what we're being told nowadays, right? We're being told that gender is fluid. Is sexuality fluid as well? I mean, they say there's a Kinsey scale. Is there a Kinsey scale? I'm going to sound like right now that I'm going to sound like I'm defending my masculinity and people are going to accuse me of shit, but if there's a Kinsey scale, I'm the lowest end of it. I've always said that and always felt that. So I've never understood the idea of the Kinsey scale. But other guys have expressed that they're on the Kinsey scale. There are three or a two or something.
But even Kinsey, like, said that, you know, the scale has elements of total heterosexuality and total homosexuality. Like, where you would be repulsed by the idea of being with someone of whatever side of the scale, the other side of the scale from you. So, like, even if there is a scale, that doesn't mean that there's fluidity in the sense that it's like I could choose at any moment to be with someone who I don't find attractive just by turning this switch. That is insane and contrary to the, you know, the evidence of one's senses, basically. Like even if a study said that, it's like, well, what do you experience at any given moment? And if you're intellectually honest and you trust your own introspection, like, you can just make your own study about yourself. So, I don't know. James, do you have anything further to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, what you're bringing up here, and this pertains a little bit to my work, is the context under which a study is performed. Mm-hmm. And most studies, they publish these results, but they don't give any kind of context for where their results are supposed to be interpreted. So it's just, there's just this, apples are bad for you. Caffeine is bad for you. What? What's like, what do you mean? What's the specifics? Caffeine causes X in this situation. And it's just not included. Just there's no understanding of how scientific discoveries are made, often by the scientists themselves. There's just this out of context data point that they can just say, and they say, well, who knows what the study will be next time? And that all comes from them not interpreting data in any kind of context. There's no attempt to frame a context a lot of times in these studies. So it just,
well, it's because they have an agenda.
This is what happens when government,
right,
funds science. What?
It's because they have agenda, right?
Yeah, that of course weighs in on stuff like that. We can definitely speculate on a particular agenda. I couldn't tell you for sure there's a particular agenda behind this, but does it line up remarkably well with people trying to destroy all kinds of, you know, conceptual black and white lines between, you know, homosexuality and heterosexuality? Yeah, it lines up pretty well. So we're justified in being a little suspicious of that. Just in like that, you know, global warming claims somehow coincidentally are supposed to show us that the state should expand. Huh. You know, yeah. I mean, it's not enough to say like that's definitely the motive behind everything they all say. But, you know, it's pretty convenient. You know, we have to take that into account when we have, as part of the context when we evaluate these scientific studies, is that at the end of the day, it lines up really well. You know, and here's another example that comes from my context is, don't you find it funny that in the 1920s, when they were discovering quantum mechanics, they just somehow ended up finding out that the world comes down to objects that are both particles and waves at the same time, and somehow coincidentally that lines up with a Hegelian / Marxist interpretation of the world, that the world boils down to fundamental contradictions. Huh. I wonder if somehow the philosophy had something to do with their interpretation of the experimental results. It's not enough on its own, but you notice it coming out just right like that, and it makes you wonder.
Yeah, but when you give particles a little bit to drink, they're pretty open to waves. So.
That's right. Yeah, their wave function becomes a superposition of partially localized particles and, you know, distributed, you know, momentum functions. That's right. When you give them something to drink.
Distributed hot momentum functions talk. Is like the most esoteric way I've ever heard of describing an orgasm.
What?
You know, by the way, if this is the case, you know, this straight men being more interested in gay sex after drinking, and it, you know, conceivably, you know, without looking into the research or whatever, then gay men after drinking would be more interested in straight sex, right? Why is it only ever one direction that we hear about?
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. These are all great points, and they're actually all relevant to director Stuart Wade's new film, and he's going to be joining us next in The Hopeful Romantic with JML. Joining us on the show now is writer-director Stuart Wade. We're going to be talking about his new feature and his crowdfunding campaign for it in a little bit here. Say Yes. Stuart, welcome to the show.
Hi. Great to be here.
Glad to have you. We know you're a listener every week, so it's exciting when someone makes that jump to the transition to joining the show. And we're interested in your thoughts on a lot of what we're going to talk about here. A little bit about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 and then some trailers. So it'll be great to get your insight on all of that, especially because I think one of the trailers is right sort of up your alley. So that'll be interesting. So to get started here, I saw Guardians of the Galaxy. I don't think anybody else was able to manage to get there, correct?
Correct.
DC Hold on 1 second while I bash on the place where I live. I tried to go to 5 or 6 different showings of this, totally sold out. Everywhere. How is that possible? This movie can't be that good. Anyway.
Well, it's not a question of good, it's a question of popular.
Right. And it was popular, and Stuart, you had a similar experience, right, where everything was sold out for you too?
I didn't try as many places as Daniel did, but yeah, I had the same experience.
Yeah. So this movie is, in fact, not that good. This movie was, in fact, pretty terrible. So you've actually all saved yourself a lot of time and money by not going to this movie.
Invest that $13.
$13 means a lot more to me living in California, Daniel.
Shut up.
Yeah, so everything I've said about Rogue One, I almost take back. Because for the first 3/4 of this movie, there is no conflict. I call this movie The Guardians of the Galaxy Talk About Their Feelings and Then Fight a Planet. That's what this movie is. So for the first 3/4, there's just nonsensical talking about their feelings, moping around. And then, you know, Quill meets his dad and he talks about, like, oh, why did you leave, blah, blah, blah. And then it's finally revealed that his dad is actually the villain. And he's trying to get Quill to help him conquer the universe. So from a pure narrative standpoint, it's just really sort of bad from that perspective because it relies simply on all theatrics in the negative sense. It's all sort of shiny objects and bright lights distracting you. And that is very much concretized in Baby Groot, where the whole opening title sequence is just Baby Groot dancing around while there's a fight going on in the background. And I was thinking, oh, we finally get out of this cliche of the first fight. No, they then transition into another first fight. So it's just, it's all distracting in that way. But what's really distressing about this is when you get to the villain, do you know what his dad's name is?
Kurt Russell.
I do, but only because I talked to you earlier.
All right. Kurt Russell plays the character of Ego.
Oh.
That is his name. And what his entire goal is to reshape the universe in his image, which will destroy all life in the universe. And he wants to do this with his son so he's not alone when he does this. So the whole thing is ultimately anti-individualism because, of course, it carries over the idea from the first movie of family being what matters the most and that Quill's true family is the Guardians of the Galaxy. And then you have the whole subplot with Gamora and her sister Nebula and how they get closer because they're sisters. And Yondu is redeemed in the movie and he's Quill's true father. So you have that whole thing. And then it's how Yondu is redeemed that's also distressing. So in order to beat Ego, Quill has to use the power that he has because he's half God to remake matter. But he tries to do it and he keeps failing at it. And so Yondu, if you remember, he has that little arrow he controls that like just fucking kills everyone. And I don't know why Yondu doesn't just rule the universe with how powerful that thing is. So he has that. And when Quill can't do it, Quill says, you know, I've thought about everything I can. And Yondu says, well, I don't think when I use my arrow. And then eventually in the climax, he tells him, I don't think I use my heart. So James, you asked at the top where I got this from. I realized watching this movie, it's teaching people selflessness and narcissism at the same time. It's just pure emotionalism is what wins in this movie. And it wins so he can fight selflessly for his family. And this is definitely true because of Ego and Ego being the villain. So I have 2 questions about this movie that I want to throw to you all real quick. The first is a question about Marvel. Was Marvel always this bad? Was this always their agenda and they've just got enough popularity that they can execute it now? Or is this just simply marketing? They know that this is what sells. And 2, where is the line here between the idea of escapism and mindless entertainment? Because somebody posted that on my Facebook and I have an issue with the idea of entertainment being mindless. I never want to turn off my brain when watching something, but at the same time, everything doesn't need to be serious or academic. So from this awful movie, I think we can have a couple interesting points. So either question you guys want to answer, let's start with Daniel and then James and then Stuart.
I don't think Marvel is historically this bad. I mean, Marvel's characters have diverse viewpoints throughout their history and have celebrated in many ways the values of the time and American values and timeless values and values that I think we would find fantastic. It's just Marvel in the modern context decided that, and this is not just the movies, this is the comic books and cartoons and everything else, that the values that they were going to espouse were going to be more progressive values. Values that are, in fact, directly contradict some of the values of their early characters, especially like Iron Man and Captain America. Captain America is a huge one. Captain America doesn't even defend America anymore. That's how far Marvel has come in changing the values of some of their characters. It's sort of a marketing question about, well, you know, how do we market these characters with seemingly quote unquote outdated values to a fan base who's into, social justice and progressivism? Well, we'll make the characters that. And I just think they've tried to find angles with these particular characters that I'm sure irk us in particular, but don't seem all that out of place in a mainstream audience.
I would have, to go off of that, I would have answered your question, Justin, in the, they're just going with whatever they think is marketable. But Iron Fist, or at least the amount of it I was able to withstand before turning it off, kind of went against that premise that Marvel is just out for money and without any kind of consideration for artistic merit. I think they are out for money, and that's, you know, partially a good thing. But it comes at the expense of artistic merit. But at the same time, they're offering these cheap tricks in order to appeal to what they think is going to be the morality of this new culture, or rather the worldview of this new culture. And part of that means extreme naturalism, I think, is what Iron Fist, I think part of what that leads to is an extreme naturalism. At least that's what I saw in Iron Fist. It's only logical. I don't think they meant to do it, because I think if I remember correctly, Iron Fist was pretty universally denounced as bad and boring. But as long as they're going to pander to that, I think, you know, boring ass naturalism is going to leak in. So I'm not sure what to think of this particular movie, but that's what I'm noticing with Marvel as it changes.
Yeah, and that's certainly the first three quarters of the movie. As I said, Guardians of the Galaxy talk about their feelings. Stuart, do you have any thoughts on this topic about Marvel, or the latter topic about what, you know, entertainment and mindlessness and escapism, and how that fits into making movies?
I do have some thoughts. First, I think that while in general Marvel may be, you know, just sort of following the times and becoming more progressive, you know, because of that, it sounds, and this is without having seen the movie, but it sounds to me like in this case, this may be where Hollywood is actually trying to lead the culture off a cliff, but leading rather than following, by making it so explicit, by making the character's name Ego. That really sounds like, you know, that's not just, you know, oh, we're going to kind of follow along the trends. That really sounds like they're trying to lead us down a very negative path. So I think in some cases, and certainly it sounds like in this case, you know, Hollywood isn't a follower so much as a leader, and that's a bad thing when they're leading in the wrong direction. And in terms of the question about mindless entertainment, I think what people want when they say that, they don't truly want to turn off their mind. They don't want their mind to be challenged necessarily, like by bad, you know, things that jump out and, you know, like take you out of the movie, or things that, you know, make you challenge your worldview or anything that's too difficult. But, you know, I think a good, you know, what people also sometimes call a popcorn movie, you know, a good popcorn movie, it's not mindless in a bad sense. It's just, it's fun. It's, you know, maybe clever and interesting, but, you know, it's not going to rock your world. But it's a couple hours, you know, with a tub of popcorn, having a good time and maybe taking your mind off your troubles.
Yeah, I mean, I think Stuart makes a good point overall. It's not necessarily mindlessness, but it's certainly more toward the escapism side. I think people take that as escapism as a value, which is I can go to this thing and I don't have to think about Trump or Hillary or the Antifa for a little while. But, you know, it's interesting what will happen when there's more, to use our favorite word, convergence with the filmmaking industry, where you can't go to a movie to escape those things. Like, going to a movie will just be hitting you over the head more with those things. And Marvel is doing that somewhat subtly in this, but maybe not so subtly. But, you know, I think it's going to only get more explicit, certainly as the culture gets worse. And yes, I think certainly Marvel's probably leading a bit, especially with their less than legacy characters. Like, it's hard to lead that much with an Iron Man character, but it's easy when no one's ever heard of Guardians of the Galaxy. So,
right, or Doctor Strange, which is your argument, or are you saying that's why they did it with those two characters?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, and Civil War was pretty bad too, though. I want to make that point. It's their last three films.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. That's all.
All right, let's talk about what's upcoming and seeing if maybe other companies are redeeming the Hollywood industry.
Trailer takedown. First trailer.
Well, before we do that, we're going to talk about Marvel's next thing, The Defenders. And I want to talk about this trailer not as if we've already bashed on all of these Marvel series. The Defenders is Netflix crossover series with Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, and Iron Fist. So let's talk about this as if it's its own property and what you thought of it. Daniel?
Well, to be honest, it looked more interesting than 3.5 of the individual series that is represented in it.
Yeah.
So the trailer was fairly intriguing, but I wasn't really intrigued. Like, I was kind of like, sort of passively watching. And then Sigourney Weaver comes on screen.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, she's just so, she commands my attention when she's on screen. And I immediately was like, I kind of want to know if she's going to be a friggin' badass character in this. So well done there, certainly, Marvel, on the casting. And I don't even know what part she plays. I assume it looks like she's the bad guy, which is kind of cool. I know this is going to fucking suck, but I really still want to watch Sigourney Weaver. So
that's Marvel in a nutshell, isn't it? Like, Spider-Man Homecoming, I know it's going to suck, but I really want to watch Robert Downey Jr.'s Tony Stark.
This is really going to suck, but I love Benedict Cumberbatch. It's like, yeah. So I'm intrigued by the first. I will give it an episode, or at least I will give it an episode with Sigourney Weaver. So does that count as a hug? It's like,
that is a tentative hug. Tentative, I will use the tentative hug sound.
Okay. Hug?
James?
Yeah, it starts off. I didn't see Jessica Jones, so I can't really judge that. But she's still sort of interesting to me. The trailer starts with Jessica Jones, and then Rupert Murdoch comes in, and I liked
what?
Daredevil or whatever his fucking name is.
I missed that part of the trailer.
Or Matt Murdock comes in, and I liked the
that
Daredevil
makes more sense.
Rupert's son.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Rupert's little known love child.
I liked Daredevil, but I didn't like Matt Murdock. But I was still intrigued. I'm like, oh, okay, it's all coming together. And then Luke Cage was on there. Saw one episode of Luke Cage and was kind of just boring, but I didn't mind the character. So that was kind of cool. Like, oh, it's all coming together. And then Iron Fist guy shows up with his curly, lame ass hair and everything. I'm like, oh, great. Like, this, you know, and this is going to be boring. Like, but it still looked cool. It looked like it was going to be cool. I just can't see how they're going to, you know, unless the Punisher kills all of them or something. That would be interesting. I'd watch that.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing this is a tackle, James.
It's like maybe the Punisher will be in it, and it'll be the second season of the Punisher, and I'll watch that.
I'm going to play the tackle sound for you.
Tackle?
All right, Stuart, what do you say, hug or tackle?
I would give it a hug. Largely, I was sort of a tentative hug until I saw a Sigourney, and then they had me. So, yeah, I would say hug.
Hug.
All right, well, I am going to say the only thing I liked about this trailer is Scott Glenn as the voice. I've loved him ever since Sucker Punch, and the fact that he's somehow become like the guru of this little mini universe is awesome. But I'm still going to tackle this because I fucking hate all of these characters. So
tackle.
Fair enough.
Second trailer.
The Big Sick is a semi-fictional or semi-real, I don't know how you would say that, romantic comedy about how comedian Kumail Nanjiani fell in love with his white wife. And I always say that because the trailer makes an issue of race. I'll talk about this first just because I have a couple things to say about it. Kumail Nanjiani is an example of somebody for me in today's day and age where I have difficulty supporting anymore just because of the way he is on Twitter. He is so far left on Twitter that it makes it so difficult me for to like his stuff. Even though I've loved him since Franklin and Bash when he was Pindar, he's good on Silicon Valley, and this trailer was actually enjoyable. I thought it was very funny. I thought putting Ray Romano in it is a great choice to get a much larger audience because of the demographic he appeals to. And, you know, a lot of the jokes were funny. I particularly liked when Ray Romano's character, the father of the woman Camille is pursuing, says to him, "I've always wanted to talk about 9/11. And Camille's like, "You've never talked to anyone about 9/11? Like, that's very, very funny. So there's a lot I like about this. And because of that, I'm going to put aside my politics and my issues with Camille, and I'm going to hug this trailer.
You are single-handedly bringing this nation together, Justin.
I know, I just crossed the aisle. I crossed the aisle.
You did.
Good for you, Justin.
I mean, it wasn't that far, but you did cross it. It's like three quarters of a step, but you got there. Loved it. Loved the trailer. Thought the trailer hit really well. This is, in terms of this kind of movie, this is probably the best possible version of a trailer you could do for this kind of movie. I'm in. Love Kumail. Think he's phenomenal on Silicon Valley. And I have this relationship with Hollywood that you do, Justin, where it's like it pisses me off a lot. But I have my one symbolic Hollywood boycott. And so I feel like I get to take everything out on that person, except that
George Clooney.
Right. They're not that famous anymore. So I'm gonna have to pick a new one.
Also,
but
I have a question for you about this trailer. Are you morally obligated to see this trailer because you are the inverse?
Except that our relationship was nothing like this. There was
I know, you took her away from her culture and completely whitewashed her wedding.
Well, yeah, but it was like, "Faiza, do you think your family would be upset if you married a white guy?" And she was like, do you think I give a fuck about what my family would think?" I was like, "Oh, great. Okay. Perfect. Excellent." So it's kind of
for audience context, Daniel's wife is Pakistani and Kumail Nanjiani is Pakistani.
So they're basically siblings.
Yes.
I thought you could say basically the same person.
Yeah, that's right. Especially that unibrow.
Maybe you should get drunk, Daniel.
Yeah. So I'm totally hugging this. I think this looks great.
Hug.
James?
For me, this gets a tentative hug for all of the positive reasons that you guys cite. This did look really funny. This did look like it had, you know, some good emotional notes in it. But because of Kumail Nanjiani and because of some of the subject matter that the movie touches on, I'm a little worried that I'm gonna end up getting blasted with social justice-y stuff. I wish we didn't in the cultural context we're in right now. It's the type of worry I have to have. So tentative hug for me, or like hug that one. Do that one.
Hug.
Thank you for confirming you listened to the show, James. Unlike Daniel,
never listened, never will.
Stuart, what'd you think of this trailer?
I loved it. It's a great big hug for me. I think he's terrific on Silicon Valley. I make a point not to follow actors on Twitter because, you know, I know they're just going to annoy me, and I don't want to have their work. You know, if they're talented people, I'd like to be able to enjoy it without knowing what idiots they are in person. So I'm sure you're right that his Twitter feed would annoy me, but not having ever seen it. I like him as a performer, and this trailer looked great.
Hug. Final trailer.
The Dark Tower is an adaptation of Stephen King's book series, And the trailer to me looks like a cross between The Last Action Hero and The Neverending Story, where there's a fantasy world that a kid knows about, and he becomes part of it and becomes friend with the action hero. And then what happens in that world affects the real world. I once tried to read the Dark Tower series and couldn't even get through the first quarter of the first book. So I think this may be an example of the Stephen King movie being better than the Stephen King book, which tends to happen.
Yeah.
And as far as my rating of this, I'm going to give this a tentative hug because I do like all the town involved and it looks very interesting visually. Although I have an interesting question to ask. Are the races of the leads inverted in this movie? Do with that what you will. Daniel?
Having never read the book, I can't say anything about the races. I didn't know it was inverted or wasn't inverted or whatever. So, you know, rolling off what you said, you know, the never-ending story, and what was the second one you crossed it with?
The Last Action Hero, the one where Arnold is like an action star and the kid goes into the movie.
That's right.
And Arnold comes out of
it. Last Action Hero plus Never-Ending Story plus guns. So,
yeah,
I'm in. I liked the glorification of firearms in this.
Yeah.
I liked that part. So I don't think there's any political statement to that at all. It's just part of the mythology of this universe, but I suspect it's going to be attacked widely for that element. And so I'm gonna see it. I'm going to see it just for that.
Hug.
NRA, you can send your check to Daniel T. Richards, care of. Yeah. So
the Midside.
That's right.
James?
This looked really badass is all I can say. And I want to... This makes me want to read the books before watching this movie. There is one really piece. There is one really big piece of bad news I have to let you guys in on, though. Mm. For me, it's bad news anyway. I'm not sure if you'll agree. The film will be an hour and 25 minutes. And to
that's
me,
short.
Yeah, that is really bad news to me because it, you know, it makes me wonder like this. You know, the trailer makes it come off as sort of somewhere between a deep movie and a popcorn movie is the way the trailer makes it come off as. It's like it's not going to change your view of existence, but it's also not, you know, just lighthearted fun either. When I hear that it's an hour and 25 minutes, I've come to expect so little from Hollywood these days that I was just like, this is going to have a plot that makes no sense. There's going to have no theme that is consistent whatsoever. Everything's going to be cut to the bone, and it's just going to be the dude shooting, the kid screams at the end, and then it all turns out all right. That's what I'm afraid is what's going to – and I'm not going to know what happened. That's what I'm afraid is going to happen when I hear that it's 85 minutes long.
So is that did you say tackle or hug already?
No, I mean, I'm hugging it. I'm watching this fucking movie. It looks awesome, but I'm afraid.
Hug.
Stuart?
Definitely a hug. I'm a huge Stephen King fan, and while Dark Tower isn't my favorite series, I have read it. I did like it. And I think the casting looks great. Now that I this is the first I heard about how short it was, that does concern me. The books, I mean, there's like 20 of them or something. It's a huge series. I'm sure they're planning a series of the movies as well, but if they don't do the first one right, nobody's going to want to go to the rest. So I don't know, but I'm definitely planning to see it.
I want someone to make psychological thriller out of The Walk. Stuart, have you read The Walk?
yes, I have. That would be I think it's called The Long Walk.
Yeah. You're right. The Long Walk.
Yeah. That was very powerful. That would be hard to convey in a movie, but somebody might be able to do it. Yeah.
It's not Billy Flynn's Long Halftime Walk or whatever that fucking movie
is. No, that was not a Stephen King story. And I did not see that. And it looked
awful. It's a more, to me, it's a more interesting version of all of the walking scenes from Lord of the Rings.
So get Peter Jackson to direct it then.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's he up to anyway?
Yeah. Hmm.
He's doing the Kong shared universe, isn't he?
He's doing Hobbit v. King Kong is the next.
Yeah.
Just going to melt this for all it's worth.
No, just to put a lantern or to hang a lantern on what I said and to and before we transition into talking about Stewart's movie here, is I was just making a racist joke at the top because the villain's the Man in Black and Idris Elba is black. So.
Oh, yeah. So in the book, they're both white men.
Right.
But the Randall Flagg, which is the Matthew McConaughey character, is called the Man in Black,
yeah.
Not the black man.
Right.
So, so they didn't actually invert the races. They just cast one. In the book, it actually, you know, I mean, his race is, the main character's race is completely unimportant. So I don't have a problem with them casting Idris Elba because he's a great actor.
Right. And part of the reason I tried to read this is I heard that the Man in Black on Lost was inspired by the Man in Black here. I don't know how true that is, but.
Oh, I've never heard that.
Take that for what you will.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about your movie, Stuart. Your movie is called Say Yes.
Yes.
And you said it was inspired by a Reddit post. So do you want to tell us what the movie is about and how it was inspired by a Reddit post?
Sure. So it's basically three main characters. The lead woman is diagnosed with cancer very early in the movie, and she's got a husband who loves her very much, and she's got a twin brother who she's been incredibly close with ever since childhood. And as she becomes sicker, the brother moves in with the two of them to take care of her. And in the process of caring for her, the two men start to become attracted, but they don't even realize it at first. She notices it. And the twist is that rather than being jealous or freaked out, she encourages it. She recognizes before either of them are willing to that she's going to die, and she wants them to end up together. So it's kind of an unusual love triangle. And so the Reddit post had nothing to do with cancer, per se, but it was... a story about two straight men, or previously straight men, I guess, who fell in love. And they were best friends, and one of them became ill, and his best friend moved in to take care of him. And luckily, it wasn't fatal. It wasn't cancer. I forget what it was. But anyway, in the process of them living together and his friend taking care of him, he just realized that nobody had ever cared for him. No woman had ever cared for him the way this friend was. And they ended up falling in love. And, you know, it was very interesting because they... said they had to really negotiate, like, how do we deal with sex? Neither of us know anything about gay sex. And it was very interesting. So, yeah, that was kind of the inspiration for that concept.
So what made you add the female character and make it a triangle? Did you just not want to get sued by the people on Reddit?
No, that actually never even occurred to me. I just thought that it would be stronger, well, more conflict and more just heartache and just bigger emotions to have it be the three people.
Pulling the cancer card, huh?
Well, I did also have a friend of mine last year who passed away from cancer. So that was also on my mind. So I kind of combined the two things that were on my mind into one screenplay.
Oh, okay. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. I mean,
Daniel, it sounds like you have a question.
Well, it's an interesting concept. The conflict is not with the woman, and so it's the conflict with the two men. So it's
the conflict.
Yeah,
yeah. The conflict is really sort of with the men and societal expectations. Mm-hmm. It's really about, you know, are they going to be able to live with themselves and with the scorn that they're going to get? I mean, it's hard enough. Although it's really not that hard these days in Southern California, but you know, for a lot of people coming out as gay is a big deal. But, you know, it's one thing if you come out at, you know, 18 or whatever, it's another thing if you start sleeping with your, you know, your dead wife's brother. So, you know, that's kind of the central conflict is, you know, the husband is kind of the main character and he's got to, you know, deal with the fact that he has this attraction, but that if he acts on it, you know, he's kind of one of those people who's just always been a really nice guy and everyone likes him. And he's got this likability thing that's kind of part of his personality. And he has to deal with the fact that there's going to be a lot of people that do not like it, do not like what he's doing. And he has to decide, you know, is he strong enough to handle that?
Yeah, absolutely. I have another question for you, which is, you know, tough concept, I think, to pull off for people, you know, who have sort of rigid, you know, whatever beliefs about sexuality or Christian or whatever. How do you make a good story, like this is an interesting premise. How do you make it a good story that's interesting for people without making it, quote unquote, a gay story or a bisexual story or a gendered story? Like, how do you think about that?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I mean, that is going to be a challenge, and that again is part of why I put the female character in there, because I think that does, then it's not, just the story about the two men. Yeah. It's a little bit broader. I think, and also having it be about her illness and her ultimately her dying. The other aspect of this that I didn't mention that I, probably would appeal to your audience. I think it's very rare for movies to deal with death among non-religious people. Mm. And in this case, all three main characters are atheists, and they have to deal with, how do we conceptualize what's happening without, turning to a higher power? And how do we deal with the parents who are religious and who are demanding that, a funeral be a certain way and this kind of thing? So that's a bit of a tangent, but anyway, I did want to mention that other aspect of the movie.
Hmm. No, it's interesting because it's a thing where it's like people will explain a premise to me and I'll be like, oh, it's an interesting premise. And someone will say, yeah, it's a Christian movie. And I'll be like, oh, well, now you've set a certain expectation for what this movie is going to be like for me that I'm a little.
Yeah, it all ends with them on fire at the end of the movie is how this movie ends. It's a Christian movie.
That's right. And it's like, and this is a completely, obviously, unrelated plot. But, when filmmakers I know were going to make a movie about Kermit Gosnell, the abortion doctor, all I could think was like, oh, so you're going to make a religious movie about abortion. And it's like, it took them a long time to figure out how to not make that movie. Like, how to make a movie that had a compelling plot that where abortion was an element, but it wasn't a movie about abortion. And so it's been an interesting question to me, how you do issue movies without, pigeonholing yourself into a certain audience or making it unrelatable or whatever. But I think it's interesting to add the female element and then the atheist element. That could be
particularly interesting. Yeah, I hope so. I don't think of it as an issue movie. I really think of it as a relationship movie. But the theme is very much an individualist kind of pursuit of happiness theme. But I'm not, I always try not to hit the audience over the head with, with that. I don't, I'm not having them lecture at the audience, but that is ultimately what it's about.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And this is sort of relevant. And, you're saying it's not an issue movie, which is good to hear. And I've read the script, so obviously I know it's not an issue movie. But this is relevant, though, to something we talked about in the news section this week, where there's a story of, I know you read the outline, I don't know if you looked at the story specifically, Stuart, but there's a story about where they did a study where it supposedly said that straight men are more likely to have gay sex when they've been drinking or they're drunk.
Right.
And we sort of talked about the Kinsey scale a little bit and, the idea that people are saying sexuality is more fluid than people believe. Is that the angle you're approaching it from here?
Yeah, I mean, yes, I think that, both straight and gay people have kind of set on this idea that, you're born this way. That's, the Lady Gaga song that the gay community embraced. And I don't think sexuality is that simple. I've been gay, I think, my whole life, but my sexuality certainly has changed over the years. And, I have to admit, I get a little turned on watching the new Wonder Woman trailer. That woman is hot. If I were ever in a situation, I think my boyfriend would probably give me a pass on that one. I don't know. I shouldn't speak for him, but I would hope because that would be awesome.
Well, Daniel, that leads into your question perfectly, I think.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, Stuart, how many vodka cranberries before you would sleep with a woman? But I guess the answer is it depends. Is it Gal Gadot?
It depends on the woman. Yeah, I wouldn't need a single one if it was. What's her name? Gal Gadot.
Yeah.
The question is not how many vodka cranberries. It's how many Wonder Woman movies.
Absolutely.
But I think for all of us, no matter the sexuality for a man, it's one Wonder Woman movie will make us want to sleep with Gal Gadot.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. She's just hot. But
yeah.
Oh, sorry.
No, I was just saying. I was. I. You know. happy to hear you say that, Stuart, because one of the points that I brought up at the end of the news segment on this study is that, you know, you hear a lot more in the direction of like, oh, give straight men, here you go, Justin, a Russell's and a soda, and they're more likely to go gay, but you never hear news or studies in the opposite direction. And so I wondered, like, is this an agenda-driven thing or what it was? But
I could be, but I know that it does happen the other direction. And I know, I mean, aside from the alcohol issue, like, I remember this was now probably about 10 years ago, but I don't know if you know the director, Greg Araki, but he did Mysterious Skin, that was Joseph Gordon-Levitt's kind of big breakthrough, and a bunch of other stuff. But anyway, he's kind of a well-known gay director. And about 10 years ago, he had an affair, a very public affair, with a female director. And the gay community was like incensed. It's like, but you're our guy. And, you know, I think that misses the point of what the gay movement should be about, which is, you know, kind of the point of my movie. It's like people should be able to pursue their happiness. And, you know, as long as they're acting honestly and rationally, you know, I think a lot more people would be open to different kinds of relationships, whether, you know, polyamorous within heterosexuality or, you know, whatever. I think people are so influenced by what the society tells them that they often just ignore their own wishes and feelings. And obviously, I think that's a mistake.
All right. Well, that's a pretty good summary of the movie and the theme. So why don't you tell us where we can support this project if we would like to?
Yes, please. Okay, so we have a crowdfunding campaign on a site called PinkStart, and our URL is pinkstart.me/en/sayyesmovie. So please, even if a couple dollars helps us out, this is an ultra low budget project. We're mostly shooting at my house, but even so, it takes money, and we're not there yet. We've raised some, but not enough. So yeah, if you think you'd like to see the movie, you can. By donating $10, you get a download, so that's cheaper than the $13 you'd pay in the theater, and you get to see this, and I think it's going to be good.
And is there a Facebook page?
There is. It's facebook.com/sayyesmovie. So even if you don't have any money, which I can relate to, go to our page and like it. That would be helpful too. And, you know, spread the word on social media. That helps. Everything helps.
And you can find the link to the Pink Start on Facebook,
on the right? Facebook page, absolutely, yeah.
All right, so check that out. And I might be working a couple days on this if he raises enough money. So if you would just like to pay my salary to work on a movie for a little bit, go ahead and send that.
Hey, if we raise enough money, we'll bring you in every day. So people go nuts.
There you go. You want me to work on a movie every day and not sit at a desk? Help me make a movie with my friend.
Only if Justin gets to play the cabana boy.
It's Hollywood. I'd do it.
Justin is actually, he's been an extra for me before. He's a very talented extra.
I'm very good at standing in the background and being ignored.
Yes, he does it better than anybody.
I learned from my family. They taught me how to do that very well. My family prepared me for this role. All right, let's move on here. And Stuart's going to join us for a round of our new game hosted by Daniel. Woke.
Absolutely, as Justin said, welcome to the next edition of Woke or Joke, the game where you try to pick out the satire headlines from actual news. So these are all, I will read you headlines, three in each round, and you, contestants, have to decide which of these headlines is a satire headline and not an actual headline written by some news outlet. Basically, we'll score on the rounds, we'll do three rounds, and then there's a tiebreaker if need be. Any questions on the round? And by the way,
Justin gets 2 points when he decides he gets that much.
That's right.
It's my fucking show, all right?
So, and of course, folks, play at home and tweet us your scores at the midside or tweet us your favorite headline. And again, I took these headlines. These are all real headlines, whether or not they're by a satire site or by a news site. These are real headlines from across the web. So are you ready, gentlemen, to play Woke or Joke?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
I guess.
I guess. Yes, and Justin. Okay. Round one of Woke or Joke. Here are your three headlines. Headline number one. Fourth grade class touring White House answers Trump's questions about civil war. And I'll repeat all of them after I read them all. So headline number two. Whooping should be banned because it excludes deaf people. And headline number three. Writer rips Orient Express for lack of Asians. I'll repeat all those headlines again. Headline number one, fourth grade class touring White House answers Trump's questions about civil war. Headline number two, whooping should be banned because it excludes deaf people. And number three, writer rips Orient Express for lack of Asians. Justin, which is woke and which is a joke?
So I'm pretty sure number three is real. I think I've heard that. It sounds very, very familiar. And it sounds very plausible as well. So that leaves us with the first two. Now, here's the deal. I think the first one sounds way too, like, perfect for it to have actually have happened. Like, that is like a Trump haters, like, wet dream. Like a fourth grader going in there and, like, answering Trump's questions on the Civil War. Whereas the second one, can you remind me what the second one is?
Of course. It's whooping should be banned because it excludes deaf people.
Yeah, that has to be true because it includes everything social justice. It's super obscure and it's super abstract and it includes a ban. Like whooping? Like what is whooping? What do you mean? In what context? Is this no, whooping should be banned because deaf people. That sounds like completely like their logic. So I'm saying the fake headline has to be number one.
All right. Let's go to James next. James, which is woke and which is a joke?
Yeah, I agree with Justin on this one. The first one is just too perfect to actually be true. And then the other two, I've just come to expect things like the other two. So, yeah, number one is the joke.
All right. And Stuart, woke or joke?
Well, I'm going to disagree. I think that while number one does sound perfect, I think nobody is as good at making Trump look like an idiot as Trump himself. So I think that one is true. And I'm pretty sure I heard the third one. So that leaves number two as the joke.
All right, gentlemen. Answers are in. And it turns out that the first one is a joke. I'm sorry,
yes.
Stuart.
Darn. Okay.
But yes, that the first one is from the Borowitz Report on thenewyorker.com. The second one, the whooping should be banned, is from The Telegraph in the UK. And of course, we all heard about the writers, at the Daily Wire, ripping on the people who hated on the Orient Express for its lack of Asians, which is funny nonetheless. So after round one, Justin won, James won, Stuart zero, but plenty of time to catch up, Stuart. As we go into round two of Woke or Joke. Headline number one. Alaska state rep confident that women get abortions for the exciting travel opportunity. Headline number two. Hot glue gun causes lockdown at Colgate University. And headline number three, Bill Clinton calls Mike Pence's strict marital practices, quote, excessive. Rereading those headlines quickly. Headline one, Alaska state rep confident that women get abortions for the exciting travel opportunity. Headline two, hot glue gun causes lockdown at Colgate University. And headline three, Bill Clinton calls Mike Pence's strict marital practices, quote, excessive. Let's go backwards this time and start with Stuart. Woke or joke?
We can't pick all of them. I think they all sound very plausible. Okay, if I have to pick one, I guess... I think number two may be a joke.
All right. James, woke or joke?
So, I'm going to have to go with the opposite of Stuart here again. I'm really having trouble deciding between one and three. Number two happened. There's just no question about that. Number two is the hot glue gun, right?
Yes, correct.
Yeah. I mean, that happened. That wouldn't even be funny if that was a satire headline, because everyone would just be confused. They're like, that actually happened, right? Like, no, that's a joke. Like, it wouldn't even be funny because everyone would think it actually did happen. So number two, I'm confident not to pick. Number one and three, if it was 10 years in the future, I would start believing number three, but that's the one that sounds slightly more ridiculous to me, that Bill Clinton would just openly talk about that kind of lifestyle choice. So I'm going to say number three is the joke.
All right. And Justin, woke or joke?
James, we think way too similarly on this. I mean, the second one involves a gun, so I'm assuming they would lock down a campus because it's a gun. Maybe they didn't know it was a hot glue gun to start. They just heard gun on campus, so they shut the campus down. Maybe it was something like that. And the fact that – here's the problem I'm having, though. One and three are both tone-deaf politicians, and we know how tone-deaf politicians are. And it's unbelievable. I have so many questions about both of them. What does abortion have to do with travel? Like, are people going to Alaska to get abortions? Is this like something that I don't know about?
Destination, like, abortion.
Yeah.
I think it's the other way around. They're getting out of Alaska because they need an abortion.
Oh, so you have just, Stuart, you have just helped me. I'm definitely going to answer.
Oh, number damn it.
I'm definitely going to say number three is the joke now, because... Although I believe that's something Clinton would say, I don't think he's dumb enough to say that publicly. The one thing about Clinton was he is a very good politician. I mean, you just have to look at him versus Hillary to see, here's how you do politics, here's how you don't do politics. Whereas, yeah. I can see, like, the bumfuck Alaska guy saying that because he's tone deaf. So number three is the joke.
Gentlemen, number three is the joke. Bill Clinton calls Mike Pence's strict marital practice excessive, is from the Babylon Bee, which is a Christian satire site. But in fact, a hot glue gun did cause a lockdown at Colgate University, and at least Jezebel.com believes that an Alaska state rep is confident that women get abortions for exciting travel opportunities. And in fact, he made...
Is it because they leave Alaska? Was,
yes,
Stuart right?
I believe so. Yeah.
Hey, buddy, come over here. I need to get knocked up so I can leave Alaska. Do they pay for your flight? Does does Planned Parenthood pay for your flight out of Alaska? Like, why can't you just leave Alaska? Why do you need to get knocked up to leave Alaska? I don't understand.
Yeah, but they don't pay for your baggage.
Oh.
Okay. All right, round three of Woke or Joke. Are you ready, gentlemen? Here we go.
Yes.
Headline number one, Dear Handmaid's Tale, I can't believe there's no butter.
What?
That's right. Headline number two. Reading Queer Theory turns steelworker against Trump. And headline number three. 4chan inventing hate symbols faster than liberals can get offended. To repeat those headlines. Number one, Dear Handmaid's Tale, I can't believe there's no butter. Headline two, Reading Queer Theory Turns Steelworker Against Trump. And headline number three, 4chan Inventing Hate Symbols Faster Than Liberals Can Get Offended. James, let's start with you.
I have the choice to go first. Can I choose to instead go last for fear of giving away information to my opponents?
No.
No, we all had to go first. That's the rules of the game, man.
Got it.
Social bullshit.
All right. Yeah. That does
make
sense.
I feel like I should go last, so I'm going to go last. Minus 2 points.
So the first one, I don't know what to make of. The second one, I don't know either. That could definitely, both could be headlines. The third one is just definitely actually happened, because it's like, of course, like, have you ever heard of 4chan? Of course they're inventing these symbols. So I'm a solid split between one and two. I'm going to go with two, just because, like, I could, like, no butter. I guess someone's trying to be random, I guess. Yeah, number two is the joke.
Okay, Justin.
We're going to overtime, because I know number three is true, because that's due to the whole okay thing that happened with Mike Cernovich and another girl who made that symbol. And when they became White House, they got their White House press passes, and then the alt-right started using that as a symbol, and then 4chan claimed credit for it. But, like, there's even a professional luchador on Lucha Underground who does that symbol, the OK symbol, and he's Mexican, so he's been doing that for years. So is he a white supremacist? Like, it's the most ridiculous thing ever. And I know I've heard number one before. I mean, I guess it's possible I've heard it as a joke, and maybe I could answer differently so we don't go to overtime. But I'd rather force this game to go to overtime, and I'm going to answer two as well, because I think that's the joke.
All right. Stuart, woke or joke?
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with number two as well, because I'm trying to think of the circumstance where a steelworker would read Queer Theory. And short of a gun to his head, I just am not seeing it.
Very good, gentlemen. It was a clean sweep for round three. Number two is the joke. That is from... redstate.com, but it's via The Onion, I believe. That's a video. But the other two are true. Apparently in Handmaid's Tale, in the book, the women are obsessed with butter. But in the TV show, they're not, and that's sexist somehow. I don't really know how, but that's a Gizmodo article. And then, of course, HeatStreet.com reports on 4chan's inventing of hate symbols. So 4chan...
Is the Gizmodo one by that fucking girl... The cat, the one who hates Snyder. Oh no, I think she writes for IO9.
I think she writes for IO9. Yeah.
Yeah.
4chan, by the way, has been going past the okay thing and has basically made a hate symbol for all of the American Sign Language letters.
Of course.
Which is amazing.
Is distributing them. So I think that's funny. So yes, we have a two-way tie between Justin and James at three each. Well done, gentlemen. You are you can tell which is woke and which is joke. So we will go to the tiebreaker, and the tiebreaker is simple. Last week, Justin got to pick the tiebreaker, so this week we're going to play with James.
Hey, home court advantage!
No.
I made the midside!
I made the game!
I am the midside!
Okay. And basically, James, all you have to tell me is if this article is woke or joke. Okay, are you ready?
I am ready.
All right. The headline is, wow! Dolphin sex sounds really fucking complicated. Wow, dolphin sex sounds really fucking complicated.
Yes. Ah,
this is too easy. This definitely happened. This is definitely woke.
Correct! James is the winner of this week's Woke or Joke. That is a Jezebel.com article.
I demand a recount!
Jezebel.com article.
I want to hang Chad!
Again, about how men are terrible. So thanks for playing, gentlemen, and until next time, stay woke. Just kidding.
All right, Stuart, I want to thank you for joining us on the show today. You can check out Say Yes, his new movie. It's facebook.com/sayyes. And Stuart, what is the...
Say Yes movie.
Facebook.com/sayyesmovie. Yes. And Stuart, what is the Pink Start page and where can you be reached?
I'm also on Facebook, I can be reached there, but, the Pink Start is pinkstart.me/en/sayyesmovie.
And we'll put a link on the midside, right, Justin? Absolutely.
Yes, it will be.
That would be awesome.
Yes, it will be part of the episode outline for this episode, which you can find on themidside.com. It'll be on the main page for a while, or themidside.com/podcast. So check all of that out. Toss Stuart a couple bucks, help him out, help him make a movie, help me help him make a movie.
Great.
Thanks, Stuart.
Thanks for joining us.
Bye-bye.
All right, gentlemen. Let's put a cap on this episode. What did we learn this week? Daniel?
I learned that even people who claim they are Star Wars experts don't know shit about Star Wars. Come at me, bro.
James?
This isn't really something I learned, but something really positive I just wanted to emphasize is just Stewart's, you know, what he's done here is he's taking something that, you know, might be a narrow issue, but he's making it universal and saying, you know, it may just look like it's about being gay, but it's really about accepting yourself and accepting yourself and catering to your own desires as you, as an individual, which is the best way to universalize a gay theme. So I really wanted to sort of draw more attention to that.
Justin, what did you learn this week? That you should start drinking so you can act on your secret sexually gay urges?
Just because you want to fuck me, Daniel.
If I wanted to, it would have happened by now.
That's how good your game
That's
is?
That's right.
No, what I learned is just how good Snyder's casting of Gal Gadot is. She is universally, and I can say that now, universally revered.
That's right. That's right. Well, what did you learn this week, ladies and gentlemen, in the Midside? Midsiders, tell us! Tweet at The Midside, or go to facebook.com/TheMidside, or you can tell us on Instagram with a picture that is not of your junk, or you can go to Snapchat and tell us with a picture that is of your junk. So we have all the avenues covered in terms of the social medias. There's also themidside.com/podcast, where you can find all the news that we talk about this week and all the trailer links. And in fact, on themidside.com, Justin now has a from this point forward, comprehensive list of all the trailers we've hugged or tackled. Is that right, Justin?
That is correct. I started that last week, and I also have a record of all the woke or joke results. There will be a star next to this week as contested as taking away my home court advantage.
That's right. and then, of course, you can go to iTunes and subscribe to Welcome to the Midside. You search for The Midside in the search bar. Click subscribe. Make sure you get all the episodes as they happen. And while you're there, why don't you leave us a 5-star review? Click review, click the 5 stars, type in hate these douches, and then click submit. Fine with us. Don't care what the content says, as long as it goes 5 stars. That raises us up in the rankings of iTunes, allows us to conquer the iTunes charts, which we're still working on, but we're moving up. We're past Welcome to the Beehive, whatever that shit was. And making our way up to Night Vale, those fucking guys. And yeah, we're almost there. You can also subscribe on Google Play if you don't do the whole Apple thing. Want to thank Liberty.me for syndicating us with all the libertarians out there. That's right. What? Taking
yeah,
over.
We've got some engaged midsiders who are from the libertarian community. So we love you guys.
That's
thanks
right.
for enjoying our show.
Mass libertarian conspiracy to take over the world and leave everyone the fuck alone. So
I like the Bill Burr conspiracy better. We want to take over the world and sink cruise ships.
Oh yes, well there's I like that Bill Burr thing too because I don't like cruises. Fuck you, giant boats. But other than that, the one thing we there are two things that really help us out. One is patreon.com/themidside, which allows you to use the thing you call money to support our show, and it supports us because you only give us money when we produce content. So it's not like it'll be automatically debited from your account every month, you know, regardless if we're in Tahiti or Bali or where do you travel to? Justin, Fullerton? Something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes I go to Cars Land in Disney World.
That's
Disneyland,
right.
I mean.
And
what's Radiator Springs? I go to Radiator Springs sometimes.
That's right. Riding the coasters. It's actually a really cool roller coaster. But anyway, yeah, so it only takes out money when we produce something for you, which is really cool. So that helps us keep the lights on. It helps me buy a new mic here pretty soon so that I don't sound like complete shit on this show. And generally,
although if you want to give us a weekly stipend because us being awesome is a pre-existing condition, that would be within the spirit of America these days. I'm just saying.
That's right. Otherwise, we'll beat it out of you. and then the most important thing, though, because whether or not you have money, everyone can do this next thing, which is tell a friend. Tell a friend.
Oh, boy.
Tell a friend. Tell them. Spread the good word of the Midsider. Bring more Midsiders into this little cult that we have going so that we can eventually take over the world. It's a great time. So you know someone who likes Zack Snyder or, you know, secretly collects Funko Pop even though they're a little bit ashamed of it. Bring them in here. We're all friends here.
Or if you're sick of fucking Marvel, let's just start with sick of Marvel. You don't need to be pro Snyder yet. Just sick of Marvel.
That's right. If you're just sick of Marvel. That's right. You're just, you love DC, but not the one that taxes you. Then you belong here in the Midside. So tell a friend, Patreon, social media, liberty.me. It's all wonderful. We love you. Thanks so much. See you soon.
This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin M. Lesneski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Yay!